Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total at monarch.com with code budget. That's monarch.com, promo code budget.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Abby Zwirner civil trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
All right.
You may be seated.
Is the jury ready?
Jury is ready.
All right. You may bring them in.
Present, just not present in the courtroom, or would you like to do that, or would you like us to be silent on that issue? No.
Do you have any objection to that?
No.
Okay. I'll just welcome them for the morning, and I'll let you start your, when I ask you to call your, well, actually, let me make say a few words to them, then I'll let you do that, then you call your next witness.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I just want you to know we got here the same time you did, and we had some things that we needed to take up to make the day go smoother and quicker, and most importantly, not a lot of the up and down that I've told you about I really want to avoid for you folks. So I just want you to know that. Mr. Benyazin.
Yes, Your Honor. Our first witness will be Detective Rulin. She's in the courtroom, and with Your Honor's permission, I wish to...
You may.
Our client is here. Ms. Werner's here. She's just not in the courtroom for this portion of it, just given the nature of the testimony you're about to hear. Just wanted y'all to know that.
All right. And the court has permitted that. All right. Come on up.
Your Honor, can we also, if there's any other witnesses who are present, that they be excluded?
Yes.
All right. Are there any other subpoenaed witnesses in the courtroom? All right. Thank you.
Stand right here. Face the clerk.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
This way. Watch your step, stepping up.
May it please the court.
You may proceed.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you go ahead and state your full name for the court reporter, please?
My name is Detective Amber Rulin.
And Detective Rulin, what department do you work for?
I work for the Newport News Police Department.
How long have you been with Newport News?
I have been sworn since 2018.
And back in January of 2023, were you with Newport News Police Department then?
Yes.
And what was your role then?
I was assigned as a uniformed patrol officer.
And on January 6, 2023, did you respond to Richneck Elementary School?
I did.
If we can go to the IP vote.
I need to pull this.
Oh, I do need to pull that.
I'm getting my duties.
This is just a little roadmap, Detective Rulin, and just to tell you what we're going to be talking about. I just want to talk to you about your observations at Richneck, and then my understanding is that you accompanied Mrs. Werner on her route to Riverside. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And so we'll be talking about that as well. Okay?
Okay.
To start us off, at the time, January 6, 2023, were you wearing a body-worn camera?
I was.
And was it activated when you responded to Richneck Elementary School?
It was.
And if I showed you footage from that, would you recognize it?
Yes.
Okay. If we could go ahead and show clip 110A. And Your Honor, I'd move the clip 110A, which was already subject to argument, into evidence at this time.
All right. Based on the court's pretrial rulings, your continuing objection, I am going to allow it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes.
Permission to publish, Your Honor.
You may. Is this your body worn camera?
It is.
And do you recall this day now having seen it?
Yes.
And I understand this may be difficult, and we're going to walk through the next part slowly, okay?
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Reed. Detective Rulin, that last statement from Ms. Werner was her age. And were you able to hear it when you were on scene?
Yes.
And you can hear it on the camera or the body camera that it's soft or faint. What do you recall about that, or what did that indicate to you?
Can you rephrase the question, please?
Yes. When she expressed her age at 25 years old,
mm-hmm.
and it was faint, did that tell you anything in terms of your observations and what you were doing to take care of Ms. Werner about her potential injuries?
So I'm not a medical professional, so I'm unable to advise you if that meant anything for her medically. I did observe the injury to her chest, and there was the cloth covering the injury to her hand. I did not observe an exit wound, which is what I was checking for prior to the medics arriving.
And is that why you had rolled her over at one?
Yes.
Understood. Thank you. Soon hereafter, the medics did arrive, is that correct?
Yes.
And then when the medics arrived, you all took additional steps and actions at that time?
She was loaded onto the stretcher by the medics, and she was put into an ambulance where she was transported to Riverside Regional Medical Hospital.
Okay, I'm going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 110B, and Your Honor, I'd now move that into evidence.
Previous objections noted for the record and contemporaneous. All right, you may proceed.
110B.
Does she have something in her hand?
I have the shoulder, yep. One, two,
three, up. Ow.
There you go.
Detective Rulin, we just observed the loading that you just discussed. Can you walk us through what happens from this point in time once she's loaded on the, tell me the correct name for it?
It's either an ambulance or, as we call it, a medic. She was put into the medic by the medics and staff, and then I, as a law enforcement officer, got into the back of the medic and rode with her to Riverside Regional, where I remained with her until I was released.
And when you say released, really, you walked her into Riverside?
I walked with her in her stretcher to the trauma bay and to the subsequent room that she was put into. So wherever she went, I went.
And during the medic ride or the ambulance ride, did you observe her being provided treatment by the medics?
Yes.
And what, if anything, do you recall during those moments?
I don't recall exactly what they provided her medically.
I understand. Thank you very much for your time. Those are all the questions I have.
All right. Any cross-examination?
It'll be from defense judge, thank you.
All right. May she be released?
She may be.
All right. Not subject to recall?
Not from us.
From defense? All right, you are excused and you will not be called back. Please do not discuss, because this is an ongoing case, your testimony with anyone, but you are excused.
Thank you, Your Honor. All right,
thank you. All right, next witness.
Your Honor, our next witness is Deputy Thomas Blythe. And he's in the back.
Okay.
With the court's permission.
Face the clerk, raise your right hand.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you out?
I do.
This way. This way.
Watch your step, step it up.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could you go ahead and state your full name for the court reporter?
Thomas Arthur Blythe.
And Mr. Blythe is a Corporal Blythe?
Retired, yes.
And retired from what department?
Newport News Sheriff's Office.
And were you active in January of 2023?
I was.
And on January 6, 2023, did you respond to Richneck Elementary School?
I did.
And I'm going to ask you about your observations from Richneck Elementary School, and that'll be, if we can go read to the IPVO, it's just a little roadmap. That's all we're going to talk about, is your day at Richneck Elementary. Okay?
Okay.
So, can we start by, do you recall how you first heard of a call for a response. And I don't need to know what was said, just how you first heard of the call to respond to Rich Neck Elementary.
Came over the radio.
And where were you in time and space in relation to Rich Neck when you received that call?
I was about a 5 to 6 minute drive, maybe, with lights and siren going.
And when you arrived at Rich Neck Elementary, were you first, second, third in terms of first responders on scene? What were your observations?
I was technically first. Deputy Briggs was maybe 20, 30 seconds behind me.
And when you first arrived at Rich Neck, talk us through what you did in that moment.
We immediately went to the front door of the school, hit the buzzer, knocked on the doors, couldn't get in. Didn't see anybody moving around. Not what we expected to be responding to a situation like this. It seemed like an eternity for us. Was probably about a minute of banging on the door till I think a janitor or a security person opened the door for us.
And if we could go to Exhibit 9A. And don't publish that to the jury quite yet, just to the witness in the court.
Publish it to the witness in the court, please read.
Do you see, if we can pause it, do you see that image up on the screen?
Yes.
And is that an image of you as well as other uniform officers?
That's Deputy Briggs, first one through the door, and I'm right behind him.
Your Honor, I'd move Exhibit 9A into evidence.
Any objection?
No objection, Judge.
So admitted.
Permission to publish?
You may.
If we could start it from the beginning, Reed. Just the... So is that the moment that you were discussing, janitor had let y'all in?
Mm-hmm.
And that's you there at the left and two Newport News Police Department officers as well, is that correct? And when you walked into Rich Neck Elementary, were you being provided guidance from anybody on where to go? In other words, how did you know?
We just headed down the hallway. We naturally gravitated towards the office. I think there were some people in the doorway. We stopped briefly, looked into the office, saw there was a woman on the floor. Some people were attending to her. And then myself and at least the other two police officers, and I think Deputy Briggs was with us, headed down the hallway because we were trying to find out where the person with the gun was.
And have you now come to know that you were walking into room 11 or classroom 11?
Yes.
If we could show to the witness exhibit 3, what we'll call 3A, which is Zwerner 6707. Just to counsel, please. Thank you, Reed. Do you recognize that photo in front of you?
That appears to be the classroom.
Okay. We'd move 3A into evidence, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No objection.
And it's just a photo, not a video, correct?
Just a photo.
All right, admitted.
Permission to publish?
You may.
Go ahead, Reed. And Corporal, can you walk us through what happened as you walked through this door, room 11?
As we stepped through the door.
Can I give you a little bit of, not legal advice, but a little bit of legal advice? Mm-hmm. Refrain from saying what you heard people say, but really just your observations, if that's okay.
Stepped through the door and there was a young child attempting to be restrained by a woman, later found out was Amy Kovac, the reading teacher. We were quite taken aback. We didn't expect to see so young a suspect. She said that she had control of him, that the gun was in the back of the classroom and pointed that way. I immediately headed in that direction. When I found the weapon on the floor, I called out that there was a gun, and I stood by.
Can I pause you there just to bring the jury along? If I can show you Exhibit 3C, which is Zwerner 6726.
just to the witness and counsel. Yes. Do you recognize this photo?
Yes.
Okay. And is this a photo of the classroom, room 11, on January 6th?
Yes.
And can you see a firearm within the photo?
It's laying on the floor next to that chair.
All right. Your Honor, I'd move Exhibit 3C into evidence.
C is what we're doing.
C.
All right. Any objection? Without objection.
Permission to publish?
You may.
And we can sort of see that in the bottom left there. Is that right?
Yes.
Corporal? And there's, if you can see in the photograph, there's a checkered backpack there on the right-hand side. Do you see that?
Yes.
Did you all later, at some point in time, come to know that to be the backpack of JT?
I did not. I was not involved with the backpack in any way.
Understood. And so there are, if we can jump to Exhibit 3E, just for the witness. And when you're, as that gets up, as a responding to a crime scene, usually there are other individuals that will come after you as the first responder to take these photographs. Is that correct?
Yes.
And ultimately, these photographs, as they appeared in the firearm, as it appeared, you were sort of guarding the location of it so that it would remain in that location until those individuals arrived.
Yes.
Excuse me. 6728. Can it's at the bottom of the screen, you need to zoom out. Right. You recognize that as a closer shot of the firearm?
It is.
And if, I'm also going to show you what's been marked as 6730, which is another photograph of the firearm. And that's a closer shot of the firearm, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, so you're going to move both what we'll call 6 or 3E and 3F, which was were those last two photographs shown into evidence.
All right, any objection?
No objection.
All right, without objection, permission to publish.
Permission to publish 3F, the most recent photograph.
And then you go back and show them E.
I will.
All right.
And the that's sort of a ruler on the right hand side or something to give us an idea of the size of the firearm. Is that commonplace?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
And then if we go back to 6728, which was the 3E, that gives us a broader vantage point of where it was within the classroom as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Those are all the questions I have for you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Any cross examination?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yep.
Good morning, Deputy Blythe.
Good morning.
Counsel's asked you about your involvement in the investigation on the day of the shooting, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And you've mentioned that when you responded to Richneck Elementary School, you encountered some of the staff that worked there, right?
I encountered the janitor who opened the door. As we proceeded down the main hallway, at the main T intersection there at the school, there was another janitor who said, we have him.
Yes, sir.
And then we proceeded into the classroom, still trying to find the individual. And then we found Ms. Kovac attempting to restrain the child.
And let's talk about Ms. Kovac. One, during your response and handling of the situation, you ended up speaking to Ms. Kovac later during your investigation. Do you recall that?
Yeah, well, I wasn't actually doing an investigation. When I spoke to Ms. Kovac the second time, we had been sent to find a teacher and students that were supposedly hiding in a bathroom. In the process of that, I ran into Ms. Kovac, I believe, outside the nurse's office.
And I'm going to show you a display. Brian, could you pull up D57A1, marked for the defense for identification? And Deputy Blythe, I'm going to ask you to look at your screen. And I'm going to see if you recognize. This is D57A1. This should not be published to the jury at the stage, just to counsel. And let me ask you, Deputy Blythe, during the time that you responded to Rishnick Elementary School, you were equipped with police body-worn camera.
Yes.
And it depicted the events of that day and your interactions with the folks that you talked to, right?
Yes.
Deputy Blythe, do you recognize, you can see on that image, this is police body-worn camera from the day of the incident, right? This is January 6, 2023. Okay, and is this a fair and accurate representation of the Richmond Elementary School as you were going through the hallways?
Yes.
Your Honor, I'd ask permission to publish this to the jury.
I object, Your Honor.
All right.
First, it's outside the scope. Secondly, it's a body-worn camera, so there's going to be hearsay statements that are contained that A, haven't been shared, and B, ultimately, are hearsay that are inadmissible in court.
All right.
Judge, I can address those in turn. First, with respect to beyond this.
I've got to see it first. I can't rule until I see him.
We can voir dire on this outside the jury's presence, Judge,
yeah, I think we have to. All right, we did our best, folks, but at this point in time, I'm going to have to see this video, make some evidentiary rulings. We can obviously clear the video. All right, proper foundation has been laid. No objection to that, correct?
No, it's not authentic by the camera.
All right, thank you very much. All right, so I'll watch it, and then I'll hear argument.
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, and what's up?
You got a call about it? Okay. Everybody all right?
Everybody's okay.
Okay, nobody's hurt?
No.
Okay.
They have him. Where's
JT?
They have him?
Yeah, he's in custody.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, I've got three ladies in here.
It's okay.
Can we get back up?
That door leads into this office.
Yes, it's the nurse. It was just him. As soon as he shot it, I was walking down the hall and I heard and I went right in. Abby was in, the teacher was bloody.
And she came out.
We moved the kids out.
JT.
Stood there and I took
JT.
I was the one who called my.
All right, so obviously that's been edited, right? The video's been edited?
Yes, we took the original document and just freeze specific portions, but it's not been altered from its original form beyond segmenting it.
And what about the audio, though?
The audio, to comport with the court's pretrial ruling regarding confidentiality of minors' names, we had our tech professional just censor the minors' names. That's right. The extent of the
I just wanted to make that clear what we were watching.
Yes,
sir. All right, go ahead. You can stay there. Can you state your objections again now that you've seen that?
Yes, Your Honor. This is past the scope of, first of all, of Corporal Blythe's involvement in terms of what was elicited during direct examination. We talked about him arriving at the scene, locating and identifying the location of a firearm, and that's it. Now, when we get to this portion of the body camera, first of all, the question here is, what's relevant to the context of a body-worn camera in which three staff members are talking about, candidly, I don't know what the relevance is of the substance of the testimony that is being elicited in the video, but to the extent there is any relevance to it, it's the statements themselves, presumably, that they believe are relevant. And those statements themselves are de facto hearsay statements by individuals who are not parties, and there is no exception to the hearsay rule that applies. To the extent they try to argue that it's an excited utterance or a present sense impression to that extent, the issue here is that excited utterance has to be within a certain time-limited period, and the courts have often said within a couple minutes or contemporaneous. And as Corporal Blythe has already testified, it took him about 5-6 minutes to get there. And then we're talking about his response time, and then we're talking about eventually him getting to this portion. And so A, I think it's irrelevant. B, it's beyond the scope of the direct examination. C, there are hearsay statements contained within. And if it's not for the hearsay statements, there's no pertinent issue that is being demonstrated in the context of this video without statements.
Please address those three objections.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll address them in turn. First, with respect to relevance. In reverse order. First, with respect to hearsay, I will gladly, after having Deputy Blythe identify this as his video, mute any volume. I don't need it for purposes of this clip, so that should negate any hearsay objection. And additionally, Judge, this video is not beyond the scope of direct examination. Counsel began his examination, Deputy Blythe, by saying unequivocally, I'm going to, quote, ask you about your observations at Richneck, quote, your day at Richneck Elementary School. That is very, very broad and expansive. Although they focused on just the initial portion of Deputy Blythe's arrival, Deputy Blythe has also testified that he spoke to Ms. Kovac, at least during the initial encounter, and later followed up and had additional interactions with her. This is all within the scope of Deputy Bly's initial response. It's fair game. It is not beyond the scope of direct. And the court has wide latitude to allow exploration of legitimate issues the jury should hear about. Finally, with respect to relevance, Judge, this is highly probative. First and foremost, I anticipate and I will intend to elicit from Deputy Blythe that when he's encountering these individuals, this is going to be the main office. This will be Dr. Parker's office, where you could see on the video there is Dr. Parker present there. She's also there with Ms. Amy Kovac and Ms. Laura Harris. Those are three folks in the three folks who are in the office, and it will show the layout of the office. I will ask Deputy Blythe about how, when he enters the front entrance of that office, it clearly shows that Dr. Parker, her computer faces away from the front entrance. And in order to speak and interact with Deputy Blythe, she has to adjust and stand and sit perpendicular to him. That's salient to the issues in this case, Judge, because we've heard testimony in the course of yesterday and the day before that when Mr. Sims was in the main office, and also when other individuals went into the office, the way they perceived Dr. Parker was affected by how she was postured, how she interacted with them, and it will influence whether or not the jury has to decide whether or not she was indifferent, whether she did not respond. And this will account for the fact that she was working, that she was focused on her work. It's consistent with the defense theory that she was observing and diligently working. And that just, this is the layout of the office, this is the nature of it. Just because you come in and she doesn't turn and look at you does not reflect callousness and indifference.
All right, yeah, I understand. All right, so hearsay is taken care of by muting that, so that takes care of that. So, Mr. Benyazin, I'm going to agree with you that it is beyond the scope of your direct examination. They obviously have the right to recall him as their witness. I would sustain it on that. Do you have any? Now that we know that he's not going to play the hearsay, would you withdraw your objection so we don't have to call him back, or do you want him called back?
No, that's okay, Your Honor.
Okay.
Standing right, so on my objection, but I understand the efficiencies that we can accomplish.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I bet the deputy does too. All right, so legally, once again, I do find that it's beyond the scope, and I do find that it's relevant. So balancing those, however, the court appreciates the withdrawal of the beyond the scope objection at this time for the purposes you are offering, and you are only allowed to offer it for the reasons you've stated. Agreed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, very well.
And Judge, for efficiency's sake, with the same witness, I had several other clips from his body-worn camera that I wanted to address. They will primarily focus, I would proffer to the court, his interactions with Ms. Kovac and his discussion with her and prior inconsistent statements she makes to Deputy Blythe.
All right, that I'm assuming you can't, you're not going to agree to. Yeah, that.
Good assumption.
Yeah, that I think you'd have to do that in your case in chief.
I understand, yeah. Judge, but I want to alert the court. And so, very good. My understanding of the court's ruling is, with respect to these, this would require calling him in my case in chief. It's not off the table, though.
Correct.
Thank you, Judge.
Correct. All right. So, did you want to keep him on for the purpose that we've agreed on, or do you want to wait to do
all? That's fine. I'm happy to address this one individual clip.
Okay. All right. Very well. See if they're ready. And you're able to mute that. All right. Excellent. And what number are we going to give this for your...
This is D57A1.
57?
57A1.
All right, defense 57A1.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you, counsel. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Judge. Deputy Blythe, you've testified to your initial response to Richneck Elementary School on January 6, 2023. That's what we were discussing.
Yes.
And you testified that during your response, you were going in there to try to find certain individuals and get a handle of the situation, correct? During your response, you were directed to seek out specific individuals, right?
After the shooter was in custody, yes, we had a call that there were people hiding in a bathroom and that needed to be rescued.
Yes, sir.
Lack of a better term.
And during your response, you were equipped with body-worn camera, right?
Yes.
And the body-worn camera was depicting the events as they unfolded in the folks that you interacted with, correct?
Yes.
Deputy Blythe, if I show you a clip from your police body-worn camera, would you be able to recognize that?
Yes.
Brian, could you pull up clip D57A1? And display that for counsel. And given our prior discussion, Judge, I'd ask to publish it to the jury.
All right. Objections noted for the record, but publish permission granted.
And Brian, I would pause at this juncture. Judge, I just want to be clear, if I could address the jury and make note that this has been muted for certain evidentiary reasons, but I nevertheless want them to see and observe.
Objection, Your Honor.
Yeah, you can't explain it to them.
Sure.
But it is muted there, and I will allow you to ask them any questions, and then obviously in closing you can argue whatever you would like to argue.
Thank you, Judge.
All right.
Please continue. If we could pause here, Brian. Deputy Blythe, what we just watched here, this was you entering the main office of Richneck Elementary School, correct?
At the time, I didn't realize it was the main office, but it appears to be. Yeah.
It appears to be the office where you see here on the screen, that is Miss Dr. Ebony Parker, correct?
I'd never seen her before today, but...
I understand. But this
didn't
appears...
Didn't recognize her as who she was, put it that way.
Not at the time, but now that we're in court, this is obviously Dr. Ebony Parker, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and then also present in that room were two other individuals. Mm-hmm. You can see one of those was Ms. Kovac, who you had an interaction with during your response, correct?
Yes.
Now, I want you to just focus here. When we're looking at this image, this was the front entrance to, this was the main access point to get into this office, right? When you walked through, you had to go through that door in order to get there, correct?
I'm not sure if there's another door to the right or not. I'm not familiar with the office.
Understood. But as you entered the threshold of this doorway, you can see Dr. Parker is turned and faced kind of perpendicular to you, right?
Correct.
Okay. And so if she were facing forward, she would be faced away from you, obviously, right?
Yes.
In order to interact with you and talk with you, she had to turn, right?
Yes.
And you can also see that in front of her is a computer with a display on it, right?
Yes.
And her desk is facing away from the entrance that you used to access that office, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. I have no further questions of the witness, Judge.
All right.
I would move to introduce D-57A1 at this time.
All right. Incorporate our prior discussion. Any other objections? All right. It is admitted then as 50, defendant's 57A1. Are you going to have any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Did you want him still under subpoena and available for recall?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll be in coordination with you, Deputy Blythe.
All right, very well. Okay, so you are still a witness in this case, but I'm not releasing you from the subpoena, but I am releasing you from court today. All right, so they have your number and can reach you in case you need to be called back at some later date. You understand?
Understood.
All right, and still as a witness, you're not allowed to discuss your testimony, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Your Honor.
All right, next witness.
Dr. Ann Shufflebarger is our next witness. All right.
Stand right here, face the clerk, raise your right hand.
Do you swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you out?
I do.
All right, have a seat up here.
Over here. Watch your step, stand down.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you go ahead and state your full name, introduce yourself to the jury?
My name is Ann Shufflebarger.
And Ann Shufflebarger, are you a doctor, Ann Shufflebarger?
I am.
All right, and you are a doctor in what?
Education.
Thank you. Dr. Shufflebarger, I'm going to show you a little road map. It's just going to tell us what we're going to be talking about with you today. If we can go to the IPVA. I want to talk to you first, if we can publish it, Reed. About your personal professional experience. Then we're gonna talk about case retention, in other words, why are you here today to talk to us? And then I wanna talk to you about your findings and observations in your professional experience.
Okay.
And so there's enough context. You have reviewed materials and come to findings and observations based upon your review of those materials.
Correct.
And that's specific to the events at Rich Neck Elementary January 6th.
Correct.
We'll get to those kind of near the end.
Okay.
So first, tell us why you're here in terms of your background.
Okay. I have 38 years of experience working in public schools. I have been a first grade teacher, a reading specialist, worked in central office with both reading programs and overseeing school administration, and then I've been a building administrator, principal and assistant principal, over all in Virginia Beach. And when I have retired, but since then I do part-time work, fill in when principals are out.
And so there's been a term used during the case about wearing different hats. Mm-hmm. You know generally what that means?
Yes.
So you've kind of worn all the hats, or a lot of the hats, that people are going to be talking about in this case. You were a first grade teacher like Ms. Z.
Correct.
You were a reading specialist like Ms. Kovac.
Mm-hmm.
You, is that a yes?
That's a yes.
Just for him, sorry. You have been an assistant principal like Dr. Parker.
Correct.
And remind me, have you been a principal?
Yes, I was a principal.
Besides the earlier argued objections, which are incorporated herein, any other objections at this time?
No, Your Honor, just a continuing objection based on the earlier arguments.
All right, very well.
They're on the record.
All right, thank you. I will qualify her as an expert in those areas.
Your Honor, yesterday there was another expert qualified, but I don't believe we've informed the jury what that means necessarily. Can we do that so that they can understand the context of why we might be asking their opinions as compared to others, or do you do that at the end?
Well, we can do that at the end.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Dr. Shufflebarger, when we hired you to come and offer your opinions and findings.
Correct.
And when I say we on behalf of Ms. Werner, is that correct?
Correct.
And we hired you, and you're being paid for your time in reviewing the materials and being here today. Is that
correct.
Right?
Correct.
I hope we're paying you fair.
Very fair.
Okay. So in your review of the materials, did you ultimately come to findings and observations that you particularly pointed out as it relates to the actions or inactions taken by Dr. Parker on January 6th?
I did.
I want to talk to you. We've heard evidence so far in this case that there was a moment in time in which there was an initial information or sharing of information about a gun or a weapon at Rich Neck Elementary. Are you following where I'm going?
Yes.
And that was revealed
in the... Your Honor, object to the leading.
All right. If you can ask open-ended questions.
Well, yes.
Technically, they are leading, so I'll sustain that.
Yes, Your Honor. What findings and observations did you come to as a review of your materials related to the first incidents of information conveyed to Dr. Parker?
My findings were that Dr. Parker did not take action that I think an assistant principal should have taken at that time.
And when you say should have taken at that time, tell us in your opinion and in your experience what actions we're talking about.
When an administrator receives a report of a suspected weapon, I was trained, and it's written out in most policies and procedures handbooks, that administrator is to take it as a credible threat until you assess the situation and find otherwise. And so when a teacher came and reported that student said that a student had a gun, and it was a student who an hour earlier there had been reports that he was having difficulty and was threatening students at lunch, action should have been taken at that time.
And is it your, do you have an opinion as to whether that action, lack of action, in your review of the materials, did it stop there? In other words, was that the last time that there was interaction with Dr. Parker about a weapon on campus?
From my reading of reports throughout the day, depositions and timelines and different things, it one more opportunity.
Moment, right? And mm-hmm. there's been evidence, so we don't need to get into okay. what that is particularly. But that second moment, you say there's four.
Mm-hmm.
What's your view as an administrator in that context, in Dr. Parker's situation, in terms of getting a second notice of a firearm on campus?
Hearing it the first time and not taking action, I don't know, you know, what individuals were thinking at that time. But it, when it comes back up again, check the book bag, it's not there, but I'm getting reports that he has something in his pockets. That to me is a huge red flag. Take action. Get the kid secured. Search, call law enforcement, alert the principal. There are many things that needed to be done, and none of those were done at that time.
And Dr. Shufflebarger, I mean, we're talking about Dr. Parker's actions. But none of the other teachers called 911.
You know, there's a chain of command in a school, and there are usually policies and procedures that guide that. Teachers are taught report to an administrator. Administrators are the leaders and are trained to take care of that. And it's my understanding that teachers did report it. Several teachers did talk to her about that. And, you know, as a, there's even a handbook provided by Richmond. Can I mention that? The staff handbook for Richneck Elementary?
She's going to, we can hear the objection.
Objection, Your Honor, that's the exhibit that was provided late and outside court discovery.
And that is a continuing objection?
Yes, my understanding the court has not ruled on that.
I thought we were going to go ahead and allow her now that the foundation's been set, or did I misunderstand what you thought we were going to do?
I think maybe I misunderstand what we were going to do on that, because that has not been discussed.
This is exhibit.
And it's also beyond the scope of her designation. It was not, she submitted a report, and under the Crane rule, she's limited to the four corners of her report. She did not review that document, and it was not discussed in her report. I have a copy of her designation if the court would like to look at it.
I have that.
Your Honor, I think I can cure concerns and streamline some efficiency.
So you're going to withdraw the question?
I'm not going to withdraw the question because she hasn't really. I invited the objection preemptively because I saw Ms. Douglas out of the peripheral, and so I don't think that there's actually objectionable testimony that's been provided thus far. I would just ask.
At this point, she's actually asked you a question.
That's right, and so I'd like to just continue the questioning. In the event that we are going anywhere that counsel doesn't think we ought to go, we can of course take it up. But this is Exhibit 108, I think, in particular that we're talking about, that Your Honor permitted questioning as it relates to Mr. Sims yesterday, and so it has been taken up by the court. But ultimately, I think we can roll through this and get through it.
So the answer to your question at this point is no.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
All right, so Dr. Shufflebarger, in review of the materials that you've been provided, are there different hats that people wear in the world of administrating school and education system?
Yes, definitely.
And the hat of the assistant principal, the administrator, responsible for a crisis management plan. You following?
Correct.
Was that the hat that, in your review of the materials, that Dr. Parker was wearing?
Yes.
And in your review of the materials, when that person wearing that hat has received the second notice of information as it relates to a firearm on campus, what's your opinion as to how, if at all, she responded or what her actions amounted to at that time?
From the things that I read, no action was taken. There was discussion about him putting it in his pockets and the size of the pockets, but no action was taken.
And from your perspective and in your expert opinion as a former administrator wearing that hat, what's your view and observation of what that amounts to? Is that?
That's failure to act in the course of safety for the school. That's endangers folks. When you hear something like that, I know I said it before, you're expected to take it credibly. Here's a second report that people think the student has a gun. Action needed to be taken to prevent possible safety issues.
And in your opinion, is that action should have been taken by Dr. Parker?
Yes.
And was that the last time, in your view of the materials, that Dr. Parker was informed of a threat of a firearm on campus?
No, it was not. There was a third time involving a phone call between Mrs. West, who was a first grade teacher, and Mr. Sims, who was answering phones in the office. I know, depending on different things that I read.
And we don't have to get into, okay, because the jury's already heard them, okay, testify. We don't.
But there was a phone conversation, and Mrs. West asked, had the student been searched? Or had the book bag been searched? Right. I'm sorry. Had the book bag been searched?
And so, in your review of the materials, there was sort of a third moment in time in which Dr. Parker was faced with a decision or a choice?
Yes.
And in your opinion, as an administrator and as an educator in this field, how do you characterize her response? Did that meet the standard? Did that breach the standard?
No, it did. It breached the standard of care and of job responsibility.
And was that the last time, based upon your review of the materials?
No, there was a fourth time when two different teachers were at her office talking about a first grade student reporting that he had seen something and more concerns. And those staff members took it upon themselves to ask if they could check his person, the student's person. And they were told, no, mom's coming in a little bit. No, you know, we don't need to check at that time. And in my mind, that's quite a bit of inappropriateness, of a failure to act, because here comes more concern, more discussion, another report, and no action taken, and stopping others from taking action.
And so if we were to separate those moments in time, Dr. Shuffelbarger, in mm-hmm. your opinion, and we were just talking about an initial report earlier in the day that you talked about, number one, mm-hmm. is it your opinion that that and that alone and the failure to act under that circumstance breached the standard?
Yes.
And if we didn't even have that, and we're talking about the second moment in time, and if that was all that you had reviewed, is it your view that that and that alone would have been enough for her to fall below the standard?
Objection, yes. Leading, Your Honor.
All right.
Guiding.
It is technically leading. I'll just ask you to rephrase.
Yes.
Now, were you on the second? I know you asked her about the first.
Yes.
This is the second incident that you're on at this point?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
And as to the third and fourth?
I feel like each time it's brought up again, another person has shared concern. Another student has shared that he's scared because of the conversation about it. When you look at that in totality, it's almost shocking the lack of action there, how things were not followed up on. It really does breach the standard of care.
Dr. Shuffelbarger, are all the opinions and conclusions that you've provided held within a reasonable degree of your expertise and profession?
Yes.
Those are all the questions I have, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Any cross-examination questions?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Hello, Dr. Shuffelbarger.
Hello.
Your tenure in the Virginia Beach public school system was entirely in education, correct?
Correct.
40 years?
35 full-time, 3 part-time.
So about 40 years.
Yes.
And you retired in 2022?
Correct.
In those almost 40 years, you never once had a elementary school student bring a loaded gun into the school, did you?
No, I did not.
And Dr. Shuffelbarger, you agree that an assistant principal of a school is not solely responsible for school safety, correct?
No.
It's a team approach.
Correct.
And it also involves the teachers in the classroom, correct?
Correct. The assistant principal is the leader of that team.
And the principal's involved as well, correct?
Correct.
and the teacher in the classroom is actually the first line responder. You've heard that term before?
Yes.
Now, you've seen in the materials that you've read related to the case that Dr. Parker was involved with standardized testing that day?
Correct.
And there are strict rules that govern standardized testing, correct?
Yes.
And the assistant principal is the school testing coordinator?
Generally so, yes.
And the assistant principal is responsible for setting up the secure environment for the testing?
Correct.
And these tests are given online?
Yes.
And it involves the assistant principal being at her computer?
To get things started, yes.
And throughout the testing
checking
process?
Checking in on it throughout the day. It doesn't require being at the computer all day.
But it requires being at the computer a fair amount?
Certain times, yes.
Because of the security of the testing tickets, correct?
Right, but an administrator can leave the office as long as they are locked up and secured so that other people cannot get to the testing tickets.
Understood. And this was going on concurrently on January 6th, correct?
Correct.
And there were other discipline issues going on
yes.
January 6th. You read about those?
Yes, I have.
And Dr. Parker had to interject and get herself involved in those situations. You read that?
Correct, yes.
And that's in addition to wearing all the other hats that an assistant principal wears.
Yes.
And I think you agree with me that an assistant principal wears a lot of hats.
I do agree with you.
And a management of an elementary school. You agree with that? Now, you told the jury about what Dr. Parker didn't do. You would agree that an assistant principal must use his or her judgment or discretion in determining whether reports about a student are credible.
But part of that involves assuming credibility and checking to see. If it is indeed, you're to assume credibility until you check and assess to find otherwise.
Until evidence tells you otherwise.
Correct.
Okay, but that does involve the use of judgment and discretion. You would agree
yes,
with
I
that?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay. And the assistant principal can't be everywhere all the time, correct?
Correct.
And the assistant principal has to rely on other staff members and other teachers in determining whether reports are credible, correct?
To some degree, yes.
And you would agree that the first report that Dr. Parker received regarding JT was from Ms. Kovac?
Yes.
And Ms. Kovac investigated those reports before she went to see Dr. Parker, didn't she?
Correct.
Ms. Kovac is a seasoned educator, isn't she?
Yes.
Over 30 years.
Yes.
And she worked with JT daily.
Yes.
She knew him well.
Yes.
And Ms. Kovac stayed in the room with Ms. Werner and her class for a while to investigate the reports about whether JT might have a weapon.
Yes.
Ms. Werner was also in the room while this was going on. You read that?
Yes.
They were the first line responders to the reports about JT having a weapon, correct?
Correct. First line responders as teachers are to report it to administration.
Right, but that's a different question. I'm
okay.
Asking you if Ms. Kovac and Ms. Werner, who were the first, were in the room when this happened, were the
yes.
first line responders to the information reported by the two students.
Karen, I'm just going to object to preserve our motion in limine regarding argument as it relates to duties owed by individuals who are not the defendant in this action. I think we're venturing into an area of asking what is an obligation there, which Your Honor has ruled is not an issue for the court and has not been pled.
Your objection is noted and it's made contemporaneous, but I don't think we're into the grounds that I have ruled yet that are inappropriate. All right, go ahead.
See, so you would agree, you read in the materials that Ms. Werner and Ms. Kovac were in the room with a student.
Correct.
Ms. Kovac did not confiscate JT's backpack.
She did not. At the time that he was in the room.
Ms. Kovac did not...
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question?
Sure. Ms. Kovac, the reading specialist, just like you, she did not confiscate JT's backpack after her investigation, correct?
Correct.
She did not remove JT from the room.
She did not.
And Ms. Werner did not confiscate JT's backpack, did she?
No.
And Ms. Werner did not remove JT from the room?
No.
And she had removed him from the room a couple days before when he had thrown her cell phone, correct?
I don't know about that. I have not reviewed that recently.
You haven't reviewed it recently?
I can't speak to that right now.
Can't speak to it right now. At that time, Ms. Kovac went to talk to Dr. Parker, correct?
Correct.
And at that time, Dr. Parker would have learned that JT had been permitted to go on the playground with the other students.
My understanding is that when she went down to the office, they were getting ready to go to recess. And she said that she would go back and check the background backpack when they went out.
Right.
So I don't know the exact, was she there when he went out or did she leave the room before? I don't know the answer to that.
My question is different.
Okay, thank you.
Based on what you read, when Ms. Kovac went back to Dr. Parker's office to report on her investigation, you read that she would have known that JT, that Ms. Kovac had investigated, chose not to remove him from the classroom, correct?
Yes.
Chose not to confiscate the backpack.
Yes.
And that he was off to the playground with the other first grade students.
Yes.
And would you agree that that is information that tends to disprove that there's a credible threat?
No, I would not agree.
You would not agree with that. Now, Ms. Kovac goes to speak with Dr. Parker and at some point searches the backpack.
Yes.
And that was based on a discussion between Dr. Parker and Ms. Kovac that the backpack would be searched.
Yes.
And then there were some other conversations that you talked about that day with to Dr. Parker, correct?
Correct.
But you were not there for those conversations. You have no way of knowing what information anyone specifically conveyed to Dr. Parker.
That's correct.
But what we do know is some of their actions that day. You do know that, correct?
Okay.
And then you told the jury that there were two staff members, that was the last opportunity for Dr. Parker, the two staff members,
mm-hmm.
and they were teachers, I believe is what you said?
Yes.
Do you recall that being Mr. Rawls, the guidance counselor?
Yes.
And he wasn't a teacher, was he?
Okay, that's an instructional position, but it is different from a teacher.
He was
correct.
A guidance counselor.
He was a guidance counselor.
He was on the threat assessment team.
Okay.
Right? And you read Mr. Rawls' deposition?
I did.
And you read that he had not determined it to be a credible threat when he spoke to Dr. Parker about searching JT, correct?
That's what I read, yes.
Okay. And he spoke with Dr. Parker about searching little six-year-old JT, and he not sure about what was said that day, but Dr. Parker didn't refuse that JT be searched. She just wanted to wait till his mother got there to go through the rest of his things. That's what you read, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Now let's talk about student searches.
Okay.
You would agree that the decision whether to search a student is a judgment call for an administrator to make based on the information known at the time.
Correct.
Age is a factor in determining whether to body search a six-year-old, right?
Age and a lot of other things are a factor.
Sex of a student is a factor, correct?
Correct.
And you want to handle the student with as much dignity as possible so that you don't upset them, correct?
Absolutely.
You must also consider legal issues involving right to privacy.
Correct.
And during your tenure in the Virginia Beach public school system, it was preferred that a parent be present for a body search of a student.
Yes.
And here, Dr. Parker did not deny Mr. Rawls searching the student, but wanted to wait for the mother to get there because she was coming soon. Correct?
That is what I read that she said.
You were answered a few questions about Newport News procedures and documents, mm-hmm. but you were in Virginia Beach, correct?
Correct.
You don't know anything about training in Newport News on any documents that they have.
The only things I read, there is a multi-crisis handbook that I read about Newport News procedures and the Richneck handbook, and I don't know if I can discuss either of those.
But you don't know how training is done
no.
in Newport News,
no,
and you don't know
correct.
How Dr. Parker was trained
you're
about
correct.
Those documents.
Yes.
Dr. Shuffelberger, you came to be an expert in this case. through Mr. Bright, sister-in-law, correct?
Correct.
You'd never been an expert before. You've never sat on the witness stand as an expert witness, have you?
No, ma'am.
And you're charging $500 an hour to sit here today, correct?
Correct.
And at the time you reviewed this case, you knew about the outcome at Richneck Elementary School on January 6th, didn't you?
I did.
You knew the outcome. And you yourself agree that it's unfair to judge someone's conduct with 20/20 hindsight vision, correct? You agree with that?
I can see that, yes.
And you agree that Dr. Parker, in evaluating information regarding a six-year-old having a loaded gun at school, something that never happened to you, she did not know the outcome that day, correct?
Correct.
I have no further questions.
Redirect?
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Shuffelbarger, there was a question about standardized testing at the beginning of the cross-examination. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And I think the question was, you have the obligation of the assistant principal is to secure an environment for testing. Is that
correct.
Right?
Yes.
Can you imagine a circumstance that jeopardizes a secure and safe environment for testing more than having a firearm on campus?
No.
And you were also asked about other disciplinary events that were taking place at the school.
Yes.
And so it's your observation, I think, that Dr. Parker was attending to some things on campus.
Yes.
And not the firearm.
Correct.
Is there anything in an administrator's life that is more important than understanding and determining the validity of a threat of a firearm on campus?
I can't think of anything that would be. Being a building administrator is a hard job. You talked about wearing lots of hats, and absolutely administrators wear lots of hats and have to handle things that happen quickly. You may have a plan, I'm going to do this today, and you never get to it because it's almost like a triage situation. You have to determine what's more important, what is more urgent at this time, and a report of a firearm stops everything. You stop, you investigate, determine if it's credible, and then you can move on with your day if it's found not to be.
And you were asked about investigating. I think you were asked about Ms. Kovacs' investigation. Do you recall that question?
Yes.
Whose job was it to actually do the investigation?
An administrator.
Dr. Parker.
Dr. Parker was the one it was reported to.
Whose job was it to actually confiscate the backpack?
Dr. Parker's.
Whose job was it to secure the child?
Dr. Parker.
This is beyond the scope of her designation. None of this is designated for her testimony.
I'm going to overrule that.
Whose job was it to contact law enforcement?
Dr. Parker.
Whose job was it to search the person?
Dr. Parker.
And there was a question about the dignity of a child, a six-year-old child.
Correct.
Recognizing the dignity of a child. Is the dignity of a child more important than the safety of the individuals on campus when there's a report of a firearm?
I think you can manage both. You can handle all the things need to be handled with the student who potentially has a weapon in a dignified way and protect, you know, the privacy and the dignity of the child in a way that other children don't see it. But you can't ignore it. We should not ignore it.
You got to get to the bottom of it.
Yes.
And Dr. Parker never got to the bottom of it.
No.
Thank you.
Briefly on that.
Follow up. You just testified that a report of a firearm stops everything, correct?
Yes.
Stops everything for everyone in an elementary school.
For the administrator who receives the report, they need to kind of stop what they're doing and handle that report right away.
So you're telling this jury that the report of a firearm in a school stops everything for the administrator, but the teacher, the first line responders can go about their business. That's what you come in and telling this jury.
And argumentative.
Overruled.
I'm saying it's the assistant principal's job to stop and take care of it. Their job is to report, and the assistant principal's job is to act.
You would agree that other individuals involved did not stop everything that day, correct?
No.
Ms. Kovac didn't stop everything. Ms. Werner didn't stop everything. Ms. West didn't stop everything. And Mr. Rawls didn't stop everything, did they?
No.
No further questions.
Thank you. All right. Is she going to be needed to testify again?
Not from us, Your Honor. And all right. I don't think she's under subpoena from the defense, so she should be.
So may she be excused?
She may be.
All right, you are excused. Thank you for your testimony today. Because this is an ongoing case, please do not discuss your testimony with anyone.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. All right, you may be excused. All right, is now a good time to take a break?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Let's take our morning break, about 10 minutes if we can. I would appreciate that. And then I'll discuss. I would like you. We're not in recess yet, but you may take the jury, Deputy Hopper. What is the plan for the rest of the morning and the afternoon, if you are able to tell me?
Lunch is scheduled to be here at the lunch.
What is?
Lunch.
Oh. Go ahead.
We have mostly treaters lined up. We do have another staff member that we may not call just based upon the cumulative nature of testimony. And so we are going to go check and see which providers are here, and then hopefully put another witness on before lunch if possible. But if we need to jump to lunch, it's your
option. No, I definitely want to get at least one more witness in.
Great. So we can do one witness before lunch. Dr. Munn is present.
And then lunch and then doctors this afternoon?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Any problem with any of that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I'll plan on proceeding that way. All right. We'll take a 10-minute break, which means 15 minutes in lawyer time. Thank you.
Please rise.
More continuing coverage of the Abby Zwirner civil trial is coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.